This is Democracy,
a podcast that explores the interracial, intergenerational, and intersectional
unheard voices living in the world's
most influential democracy.
Welcome to our new episode of This is Democracy. Today we're going to discuss one of the most important issues that confronts us every day, from the Supreme Court to hiring practices, to social relations, the relationship between religion and democracy, and in particular, how people of deep faith can find place for themselves and, in fact, enhance our democracy on a day-to-day basis. And we're fortunate today that we have two good friends, leading figures, and most importantly, I think, model citizens in many ways with us to discuss these issues. Let me introduce them at the top of the show. We have Allison Tate. Hi, Allison.
Hello.
Allison serves the Catholic Church in 25 counties in Central Texas. So not quite as many counties as Beto has visited, but many counties. She's the Secretariat Director of Formation and Spirituality and the Director of Youth, Young Adult, and Campus Ministry Activities at the Diocese of Austin. And she's Coordinator for Region 10 of the Catholic Youth Ministry. So Allison is clearly a leader in the Catholic Church and particularly a leader in working with young people in the Catholic Church. And then we have my friend Sean Hassan here with us. Sean was elected to great acclaim to the Austin Community College Board of Trustees in 2016. And this is really one of the most important positions in Austin because Austin Community College is a gateway to opportunity for so many young Americans, so many young Austinites who don't have an opportunity. Sean has been doing fantastic work there, in particular creating an opportunity for childcare, right, Sean, for students who didn't have access before.
Right. Parents who are currently ACC students who have children of their own. For whom childcare is critical to be able to take a test or get tutoring or study for an exam.
So. Absolutely. It gives them an opportunity to study and their children to have an opportunity to get the care they need. And this was a big campaign issue for Sean. So here we have a politician who's actually followed through on a promise. Sean is also the first Muslim American elected in Austin, Travis County, and probably in Central Texas. And it's actually very hard to find many other Muslim Americans elected to office in Texas. And there are very few in the United States itself. There are a handful in Congress. So we're very lucky to have leaders in the Catholic and Muslim community here with us to talk about democracy. They're also leaders in our democracy. Before we turn to them, we have Zachary's poem, which will reflect on Zachary's thoughts on religion. Right, Zachary?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go.
Okay. It's titled An American Jew. I am an American Jew, the sort of Jew whose prayer is the hopeful word issued to himself in the school hallway, whose tallis is a stained polo, whose yarmulke a Yankees ball cap. I am the sort of Jew whose synagogue is the corner where the records are in the rocking chair, the sort of Jew whose holy land is wherever he is not. I am the sort of Jew who is Tanakh as the wisdom of Winnie the Pooh and Camus. I am the sort of Jew whose Shabbat is watching television on the couch on Friday nights, whose rabbi is the voice from NPR on the radio. I am the sort of Jew who says his morning blessings reading the Washington Post. But I am the sort of Jew that remembers. I remember the slaves, the persecuted, the forgotten. I remember tattered souls, gassed, tortured, executed, forgotten. I remember the desert wanderers, the conversos, the wave-churned, boat-filling hopefuls. I remember the Jews. I remember the immigrant in my blood, the forever boats that landed in New York. I remember the poor family selling gaslights in Traverse City, Chicago. I remember the old haberdashery along the Canadian border, far from Slavic shores. I remember the Jews. I remember visiting the synagogue on a Newport Hill, my Devar Torah the day I became a man. I remember debating on the school bus the merits of Zionism. I remember questioning the Sunday school simplicity. I remember the Jews.
Zachary, I think that's the first poem I've ever heard that connects Winnie the Pooh and Albert Camus. That's fantastic. And Jewish faith. It's striking in your poem the connections between being an American and being a Jew. How do you think about that relationship?
Well, I find that they're very intertwined. And part of what I think is that it's a shared memory as an American Jew of not only the Jewish experience, but also the Jewish American experience. And that's really important to who I am as a Jew. And also, these memories instill many of the same ideas that are in our country and our country's like founding document.
Interesting. So you see a connection, a deep connection between the two. Sean, if I could turn to you first, it's a great accomplishment that Jews can be seen in many eyes, at least, probably not all eyes, in many eyes, as patriotic Americans. It's not that way for many Muslims in our society. How do you deal with that?
Well, first, Zachary's a hard act to follow, but I'll do my best. You know, look, my sense is under the current climate, I think we all know what's kind of what life is like for many individuals who are practicing Muslims or who are culturally Muslim from Muslim countries. And so I mean, I don't need to belabor that point, right. Jeremy. I think it's an opportunity for us to educate others. I think even folks who are allies and friends and otherwise very supportive, by and large, probably have a pretty limited understanding of the diversity within Islam, the history of Muslim contributions to civilization. And some of that is because, rightfully so, perhaps, as a country, we've created hopefully a very healthy separation between church and state. But I think perhaps a little bit of the slip that's happened in that is that we don't educate about religion.
Right.
And so it's an opportunity, perhaps informally at this stage or through formal mechanisms that we create to educate others about Islam, about Muslim history, about Muslim contemporary society, and in the long run, look at what our educational system can do to contribute to understanding about one another, including about one another's religious backgrounds.
That makes a lot of sense. Allison, do you agree Catholics have obviously been seen as a part of our country for longer than Muslims have, even though Muslims have been here from the very beginning? But there's also a long tradition of anti-Catholic prejudice, both in the violent kind of the KKK, but also in the sort of unspoken prejudices. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I think that it's not as much as, well, it's not something that I think we currently deal with as much, but we as Catholics benefit from a great tradition of people who have come before, who have really kind of blazed that trail. Certainly we have, you know, Al Smith was one of the first people to have to figure out how to be a Catholic and a politician and be a Catholic in the public sphere.
Right. Governor of New York in the early 20th century, ran for president
career.
In 1928.
Right. And then Kennedy also, he did it a little bit differently, but he sort of laid some groundwork there for that. But yeah, certainly now I think that Catholics have a pretty good, other than, you know, we have concerns and definitely commitment to religious liberty. So that is usually how it's stated currently.
But the evangelical religious right, which has a whole variety and diversity of followers, and there's really no simple, a fair way to stereotype it. But there are elements of that evangelical religious right that seem to be very critical of the Catholic Church, just as they're critical of Muslim citizens. How do you react to that? How does the church deal with that? These are fellow Christians, in a sense, right?
Well, we don't generally, we fall back on our kind of our rich tradition of teachings. We have many, many social teachings that we fall back on. The nice thing about the social teachings of the Catholic Church is that they work and appeal to human reason just as much as they appeal to faith. And so hopefully that's something that as a society, we can all kind of partake in a conversation together on those topics.
Great, great. Both of you are focusing on education, which makes a lot of sense. So let's talk more specifically. What are some of the educational measures, some of the things we're able to do today in Sean's sense to turn this difficult moment into a moment that helps citizens learn more and feel their faith, respect the faith of others, but also respect our democracy. Sean, what are some of the things you've been doing?
Well, I mean, I think, again, the running for office and being in office gives you a certain platform.
That's just
and,
suicidal. Come
no,
on.
Yeah. Well, you're close up to it, so you know it well. But you know, it gives, I think, some of us a platform to educate others. I think, again, given healthy societal norms, we've got to figure out, those of us who are in office and running for office, what's the right cadence there between speaking about our faith and making sure that others who don't share our faith backgrounds still see what's universal and what's shared. For me, my work, my reason for running is very much, you know, shaped by life experience and views, but by faith, a commitment in Islam, I believe, to society's most vulnerable, because we're all created by a single creator. We share the connection, that divine light, and so there's dignity in each human being, and we owe it to one another to it's demanded of us in Islam that we look out for the most vulnerable. Our commitment to environmental stewardship, or however we understand our faith, I think our deeds and our actions for those of us in public life, certainly I imagine are shaped by it. So we've got that platform. We've got to the extent that any of us have a bully pulpit. I know we've got a little little easel here, but we've got a platform to simply educate and if nothing else, hopefully to put a human face to this. Yes. You know, this very sort of amorphous notion that some in society have of who a Muslim is and what Islam teaches. So hopefully our very being and our engagement with others humanizes Muslims for some. And I think then we talk about our faith and how our faith inspires us. So I think as individuals, that's a platform that's available to us. And as I alluded to earlier, I think increasingly those of us who are thinking about this, who are committed to this, whether we're in elected office or whether we're in the roles that you occupy in academia or in other spaces in civil society, government, what have you, may want to look at what is the role of teaching about religious backgrounds and about religion and about civilizations within our public school systems and within the other avenues that we have available. I think longer term and in a more formal, structured way, that might prove to be promising.
Yeah, that's a great comment, and it connects to something that I wanted to bring up with Allison, because I know we've talked about this before. How do we do this appropriately? I mean, I think it's clear, as Sean said, that people need to be more aware and get beyond these stereotypes where too many people grow up watching TV and social media and seeing Muslims as terrorists and Catholics as strange people in medieval costumes or people who do things to children they shouldn't do, right? How do we get beyond that and humanize the individuals? But how do we do that without creating certain alternative religious assumptions in the classroom? And where this has come up, of course, is when we've recently had people run for office who insisted that all courtrooms should have the Ten Commandments posted and that people should have to pledge religious faith in their classroom or that they should have to stand during the national anthem. That's another kind of forced faith action. How can we educate and make people aware without creating new requirements and new stereotypes?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that we have a great, again, in the U.S., we have a tradition where, you know, for 250 years, church leaders and otherwise have been grappling with this. How do we have that religious pluralism that is such an essential element of democracy?
Right.
So it's very interesting that from the beginning of the U.S., shortly after the revolution, church leaders in the U.S. were writing to the Vatican, trying to convince them of this new system, that there is hope and that it's actually something that a system in which they think Catholicism will flourish. So that was various bishops and cardinals. So they were kind of the main church leaders. But even people like de Tocqueville, you know, stated that in some of his writings.
This is Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, mm-hmm. which I know every listener has read.
Yes,
he
said,
every student of mine has read.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
parts one and two.
Exactly. Very good, Sean.
He said, you know, I think that this this atmosphere of democracy will actually allow the Catholic faith to flourish. And I think he used that word, flourish.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we have the ability, and it's neat to me that American leadership has really driven that over the past 250 years. And so everything we see is just a new version of
yes.
that. One of the things that I try to remember that I think is helpful in the education, because it's somewhat of a method, is, charity is practiced at all different levels. So love of neighbor is us sitting in this room and knowing each other. Mm. And we know that that breaks down barriers and changes perspectives. But that happens on a micro scale, and that's sort of easy to understand, but we also need to practice it on a macro scale. So within our families and kind of going up each level. And if we're truly doing that, and that's a process of self-awareness and self-evaluation, and then the practice of it, it's challenging. But I think that the practice of that is something anyone can partake in. And
It makes a lot of sense. In the Jewish faith, this is called tikkun olam, mm-hmm. right? To repair the world. And you repair the world by starting in your own home, mm-hmm. right? Sean, how do you think about
that? Well, I wanted to add a couple of things,
please,
just building on what Allison said and your questions. I think one, to avoid some of the traps that I think you're concerned about, one possible platform is to study faith in sort of the civilizational approach, mm-hmm. right, in the cultural mm-hmm. approach, mm-hmm. so that you're not getting into theology, but you're looking at sort of faith traditions and contributions of faiths over time and just basic knowledge about, faith today. I think, here, for example, in the U.S., we have this very sort of Arab notion about Muslims, but the data will tell us otherwise.
The majority of Muslims in the world are not Arabs.
So I think that might be a way to approach this. I think building on Allison's point, I think there is a certain, perhaps because it goes back to de Tocqueville and to our kind of founding days, I think we have an assumption of thriving pluralism. And I think pluralism, like democracy, is something you have to keep working at.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be a little more intentional about pluralism and about pluralistic society.
Sure.
I think when folks are feeling anxious for whatever reason, those anxieties exist, economic or cultural or gender, changing gender norms, that anxiety plays
Absolutely.
Itself out in different ways. And the counterbalance to that, if it's rooted correctly, I think is this notion of pluralism. Certainly, growing up as a Muslim, I always understood that pluralism is a central tenet of Islam.
Sure.
So there's the compatibility there between Islam and an American democracy. But I think we've got to be very intentional with dialogue and with all of the tools and all of the processes that make pluralism kind of alive and real, and not just diversity or not just tolerance, but really engagement. And I just don't know if we're as intentional with pluralism as we should be.
And what I'm hearing in your excellent comments is, pluralism takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to learn about one faith.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually have two faiths in my own background, but we all spend our entire lives studying the one or two faiths that we've grown up in. And what pluralism requires is actually studying the others.
Yeah.
I mean, all Americans should read the Quran as they should read the Bible as basic books of different faiths. So that brings us to a very difficult question, but I think a question that's at the center of a lot of our society today and hopefully can move us to a more positive perspective. How do we deal with the misuse of religion? And I don't simply mean by those who hate a particular faith and say racist things about it or intolerant things about it, but I mean those who come from within a faith and use that faith to justify horrible behavior. And we have this within every faith, Judaism, Hinduism, Catholicism, Islam. How do we deal with that within our groups? Because I think that's also one of the problems we face today. Allison, how do you think about that?
Well, let's see. That's a big question. It kind of goes back to education, again, staying involved. We are called to be involved. What's interesting about some of the information that the Catholic bishops and the Catholic Church in the U.S. is putting out now is saying that it's sort of reiterating the fact that when we see systems and practices that we don't agree with, that in fact calls us even more greatly to get be part of that and get involved and start to change things.
And so, to speak out?
To speak out, yes.
So do you speak out mm-hmm. about the abusive behavior of, mm-hmm. of Catholic
yes.
leaders?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sins, personal sins, structural sins, that's all very, very important to be explicit about, be transparent. That's really important. State these things out loud so that we can kind of process and move forward.
Gotcha.
And forgive and, you know, be with victims, but and also just kind of move forward for a better society and kind of community for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Sean, how about you?
Two thoughts come to mind, Jeremy. I mean, one is I think those of us who come from faith backgrounds for whom faith is sort of very much whatever shape it takes, whatever form it takes, is very much a part of our life. I think we need to, with some consistency and regularity, speak about these broader values
yes.
From a faith sort of background anchored in faith. I think what sometimes gets missed, I think, in that bridge is, folks we're speaking to hear about compassion or care for the poor or environmental stewardship or equality or whatever those values are, but they see it as somehow anchored in secularism or in sort of Western notions of yes. how the world should work, when in reality, these are very much shared universal values. Certainly as a Muslim, I believe that they're very much anchored in the tradition of Islam and the life sure. of the Prophet. If you look at how sort of pluralism was managed in the Prophet's time, how conflict was resolved, individuals from all backgrounds, women, slaves at the time were sort of treated. So these values are very much a part of the history, in the case of Islam, the history of Islam, and to me, the sort of core beliefs, they're rooted in the Quran. But I think that sometimes, and like you said, Jeremy, and we spend our whole lives learning about our own faiths, I think right. folks who are adherents of religion and religious worldviews aren't particularly familiar with
no.
their own history or,
right.
or these values. So those of us who are have a responsibility to speak to these values from that sort of faith
right.
anchoring, as opposed to what may be perceived as a secular
right.
kind of standpoint. I think that to me would be huge. And then secondly, I think perhaps more obviously, it's looking at the conditions that make sort of extreme behavior likely. You know, is it really sort of someone's faith, or is faith being manipulated by others, and there's fertile ground because folks are living in poverty,
right.
and so they're so desperate.
Right.
There's nothing
right.
to lose.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Sure.
And so they're prey
right.
To those who do have.
Sometimes
political
religion becomes an easy answer,
right.
just as it can be
yeah.
an easy excuse.
Yeah.
I think both of your comments on values are so crucial, right? Because it does strike me that many of our contemporary debates about religion are debates about doctrine, not about values. Right. And so one can have different doctrinal perspectives,
right.
but still share the values at the core that bring us together. And I'd love for us to spend the last 4 minutes or so on just that. What are the positive things happening out there? What are the things, especially our younger listeners, can see themselves doing, whether they're religious or not, whether they share one faith or another faith? What are the ways in which in this moment when we seem to have lost our way and we need to find our values again, how can religion help us now as it has in the past to find our values and reinstill that sense of what our democracy is about? I know you've both thought about this. So, Allison, do you want to start?
I think one thing is that we do have the opportunity to help people get beyond what the media hands us in terms of how we should think. And like Sean mentioned, that paradigm of our Western brains is us and them. It's very dualistic, good and evil. But we really all live in the gray all the time. And these values exist there in that interchange. And so I think that if we continue to just press the notion and help people practice that we are not just, it's not us and them, we're not separated, but we're one. You know, this... the political cycle does nothing to to help us get beyond that. We also see, in my work, I see a lot of young people who they're very, very open to social teaching and to these common values. And so we need to make sure that we are encouraging them as much as we can in that area. Mm. Unfortunately, we have not seen that, you know, translate to voting participation in kind of the 20-year-old population. But I think so continue to see where those gaps are and try to fill them with specific work. Right. And that's where you get to the specifics.
And it sounds like what you're doing is you're using your spaces related to the church to create a separation from the constant barrage of negativity, right? And getting people to stop and think and see the values and then hopefully take those into the voting booth and take those into their everyday behavior.
Right, to apply them. But the idea is, yeah, we think about things differently and we need to practice that. Right now there's a synod on young people happening within the Catholic Church this month. And so that's a worldwide gathering of bishops who are advising Pope Francis on young people. It's the first time they've ever focused on young people as a topic.
That's great.
And so it provides great hope and optimism for sure. But it also reminds us of that global perspective because it's not just young people in the U.S., it's young people, or in the Western world, it's young people from all over the entire world.
This is, again, how values transcend
boundaries. Yes. And we did, so locally, we did some prep work for that synod and sent some information ahead of it. We surveyed about 700 young people and asked them, you know, what is important to you? What can the church do to help you live your life as a Catholic or even non-Catholics? We had some non-Catholics who took the survey. And one thing that came through very clearly was a commitment to the common good. Mm. And so I think that's just important to remember that is there. Less talk about polarizing political issues, more stress on the common good and shared values.
That's my sense of my students, certainly. Mm-hmm. That they care about the environment. Mm-hmm. They care about economic opportunity. Mm-hmm. They really are not concerned about who marries whom.
Yes, and that's right. What they want to hear from their leaders in all spheres of their life.
Wow. Sean?
Yeah, what came to mind as we were talking about both sort of the fact that this is global and not just here, or not limited to our country, and as you're talking about shared values, is the work of the Aga Khan Development mm-hmm. Network. And I'm mm-hmm. not sure how familiar, Jeremy, given your background up in Boston at Harvard, how familiar you are with the work of the Aga Khan Development Network, but it is one of the largest NGOs in the world, founded by a Muslim leader and informed by Muslim values.
Absolutely.
And is doing work in cultural preservation and in addressing sort of, you know, generational, intergenerational, multi-generational poverty, economic opportunity. And so you see, I think, to the point that both of you all have made, is a sort of the organizational or institutional embodiment of values.
Right.
And so that is occurring at a global level. And I think to the point that you all have made is, you know, if we work backwards from there in our own lives, in our own communities, what does the embodiment of values look like here? It could be, the simple acts of service engagement of young people to say, look, this is for young Muslims to say, this is an extension of your faith, going out there and, you know, helping the folks in Florida or in Houston after Harvey or whatever the case might be.
It's the local politics are just as important as the glamour of national politics.
Absolutely.
You know, that kind of engagement that's doable.
And day to day in the community college where you're creating opportunities for people.
Right.
What could be more faith-based than that?
Yeah. Right. So it's values in action, I think. I think that ultimately for both those who are within a faith tradition as well as those who are outside, it is how do you put values in action? And I think it allows others to then see the commonality and to be educated about what a faith really is about when they can see what it means.
I think there's so much value in this conversation, which reminds us that faith is not really just about what we practice in our religious settings. It's about the values we carry forward. It's about the memories we bring. And it's about the ways we try to improve our institutions, not to make our institutions, our democratic institutions, more Jewish or Muslim or Catholic.
Right.
It's to infuse them with the values that at a core connect our faiths and connect the faith of our democracy, which is the notion of a common good and improving people through free action, not through authoritarianism. I think this connects back to Zachary's poem because I know what's always motivated me, and I think, Zachary, you were saying something similar, you know, is the memory of my Jewish and Hindu ancestors and knowing that they struggled and survived and made the world a little better. And every day that inspires me to feel, first of all, fortunate that I get to do what I do and to talk to people like all of you, but also the confidence that even though you can't see the results every day, that doing this kind of difficult work actually does in the long term make a difference. We're embodiments of that. Zachary, what are your thoughts on this? You get to close us out today.
I don't know. I kind of feel that, well, one of the things that really stood out to me in our conversation was talking about how people use religion as like a means of achieving their own ends. And I think that's like really clear in Judaism too, because like when I look around the world, I see a lot of like places where Jews are using religion, like especially in the Middle East, to try and achieve their own ends. At least, not like as a whole, but certain Jews and certain groups. And I think that's sort of a very irreligious idea because, and I think that oftentimes it's the people who claim to be the most religious who are actually, the leaders who claim to be the most religious who are least align themselves with those values. And that it's the people who aren't trying to be the best Jew or the best Catholic or the best Muslim, but they're just trying to have those values and work their lives into them.
Right, so the virtues of daily faith rather than pontificating from on top of the mountain, right? Mm-hmm. And that's part of what democracy is. I think our conversation today has really brought out in particular this notion of pluralism. And that pluralism is based on the intersection of values. The dream of the American founders and the dream of most religious leaders is not to have everyone think the same way. It's to have people who are diverse and come from different backgrounds find ways to work together to enhance their lives.
And to see that as a strength, to view that as an inherent strength as opposed to something that just is a fact of life that has to be navigated or tolerated or what
right.
have you.
I think as a historian, I would say that has always been the greatest American strength, that we always have different groups and we find a way to work together, even in our most difficult times. I'm inspired by this conversation because I think it connects the brilliant thoughts of this group with a lot of what I see young people trying to do every day. And our future is bright because of this. Thank you for joining us. This is Democracy.
This podcast is produced by the Liberal Arts Development Studio and the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin.
The music in this episode was written and recorded by Harrison Lemke, and you can find his music at harrisonlemke.com.
Subscribe and stay tuned for a new episode every Thursday featuring new perspectives on democracy.